and welcome to minute 161 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Chris Henry of the Apollo 13 Minute. Welcome back to Earth and to the show,
Chris. Well, thank you so much. It's so cool to be here. Thanks for the invite to join you.
Oh yeah, well, I had a great time yesterday, and hopefully today we'll be able to match it.
Absolutely, I have no doubt.
If not surpassed, yeah. So minute 161 begins with Ryan reflecting on everything, and ends with Ryan saluting. So yesterday we had a minute where we saw older Ryan looking at the grave marker. Basically hoping that telling Miller, you know, what has happened that brought him here. And then, you know, we had the little shock about his wife not knowing anything. And then right now, you know, she at the end of yesterday, she mentions Miller's name, and then he doesn't even look at her here, because he keeps looking at the grave marker as he's talking. And, you know, then he takes a big deep breath and then turns to her and says, "Tell me I've led a good life." And it's just really weird, because she's just completely shocked by this type of question. She goes, "What?" And he goes, "Tell me I'm a good man." And, you know, again, we obviously talked a little bit about this yesterday, but this is a very strange type of conversation for him to be having here without her knowing anything of what happened up until this point in time.
It is. And, you know, one of the things that also hit me is I feel like he's, you know, he's fighting back emotions. And think about the guys from the time frame that we're talking about, World War II veterans. They were manly, man. I mean, they didn't want to show emotion. You know, they tried not to. So part of me almost thinks a little bit of that is why he won't look at her. And then, you know, when you listen to his voice, you can hear that it's, you know, he's fighting back emotion. And I can't even imagine what's going through his head at knowing this whole story. I don't know. I mean, maybe this is me, and could be my imagination. You tell me if I'm wrong, but, you know, we talked in the other episode, yesterday's episode, about how he was like, you know, I didn't know how I was going to feel coming here, and my family wanted to come. But then when you think about him first going, you know, the beginning of the movie when they're walking toward the graves, you know, that almost takes on a different tone, where it was like he was fighting his way to that tombstone.
Correct.
Through emotion. I mean, when you think about how he's carrying himself at the beginning of the movie, now that you're here hearing this, it I don't know. For me, I always reflected on that, and you saw it a little bit differently. Maybe that's just me, but she has to be clearly sort of shocked of this reaction from him of what is going on. Like, why are you asking me? You know, if your significant other suddenly says, "Tell me I've led a good life and that I'm a good person," you know, you're like, "What is wrong? You know,
right.
What is going on with you right now?" So,
and again, she went on this trip with him to Normandy. You know, again, what?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think, and I could be wrong, but they probably didn't look at this that, okay, we're going to visit Disneyland. You know, that type of thing. It's
right.
We're going to something that will be emotional. That we're not going to have fun. We're going there to retrace steps for whatever, you know, whatever type of perspective you want to look at it. But it's not as if, you know, she must be aware that there's something more powerful going on here. When they're going on this trip, so for her to be completely shocked, and forget about this. I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off, but another question is, okay, they get to the cemetery, all right? Now, where do you want to go? Okay, I'm assuming, I don't know if you've ever been to the cemetery or not. I have not, but I'm assuming they have books there that will tell you where you can find the grave or the fake grave of John Miller, right? So he has to look through the thing, and I'm assuming they're probably not all standing behind him. You know, they're helping him. You know, here you have this 80-year-old guy, whatever, going through a book trying to find the name Miller. You know, he probably will say to his son or one of his grandchildren, okay, find me John Miller. You know, like nowadays, obviously, you know, when if we were to take this same scenario and transplant it to 2025, so someone this age would obviously be asking their grandchild, okay, find it on Google, find it on the you know, this damn telephone that I don't know how to use or whatever it is. You know, find me the, you know, what where the plot is for this fake grave, you know, that type of thing. And okay, so they're going to help him. So they all must know that that's where he's going. So again, I obviously this is why we do the minute by minute to try to get these answers. We'll never get answers for it, but because it doesn't, it's not within the script. They're doing this way. For in the script it makes sense. Okay, he knows where the grave is and that's it. You don't have to ask the question. But I like to ask this question because to me it tells even more of the story. Because you know, the shock that she doesn't know who John Miller is. So okay, let's say she stood behind when, or she was in the restroom when he was looking up the name, whatever it is. I mean, I don't know if in 1997 they had it electronically that you can look it up, or you have to look through a book. Okay, either way, she missed that, and so they're walking now. This same row theoretically should also have some of the other guys. You know, Mellish should be around here also. Jackson should be around here somewhere. Henderson, Parker. I mean, these are guys that he also spent more time with. Henderson, Parker, he spent more time with than the rest of them.
Oh, exactly. So I guess I could build up a scenario, and bear with me because this is all make-believe.
Of course. It's completely believable. Where,
yeah, exactly. It's all FUBAR here. I could see a scenario where he knew he was going to Europe. They knew they were, hey, we're going to go to Europe and for like a family vacation, and we want to go to Normandy because that is something to see, and you were there. And he writes the cemetery, and a docent, you know, writes him back about the location of Miller. So he knew where he was going before they even got there. And because that was and still is a thing. Which is why the family would have never heard Miller's name before, is because he had physical paperwork that he knew right what row or whatever he was going to go to. And like I said, I'm making this all up, but
I love it. Keep going.
Certainly possible. And maybe even that day, think about this, or on a family vacation, because nobody goes to Europe and just goes to one place for, you know, a couple days or something if you're going to go from the United States. He maybe didn't want his family to go with him that day. And now it's become something that at the beginning, like, he kind of was like, oh boy, all right, everybody's with me on this. And the thing I keep going back to is the beginning when they're walking in, and the one, whether it's his kid or grandkid or in-law, like, takes a picture and they kind of look at him and he puts the camera away. I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah.
And you know, where it's like the guy is trying to, you know, like, hey, this is something we should document. And everybody's like, not a good time to do this. You know, it's that's the feeling I always got. It was like that guy was kind of looked at as like, put the camera away. So I don't know. That's just kind of how I always built it up as you know, if you had a loved one that you had lost at Gettysburg, you know, and you knew you were going to Gettysburg, and even in the 90s, you know, you would write Gettysburg ahead of time and maybe ask where this place was or a headstone was or something. And they would write you back and say, hey, if you're coming to visit, this is where you want to go. That's just how I always kind of built it up, that why the family didn't know where, or it wasn't his first trip there. You know, maybe it was like long, long, long time ago he had done it or something. I don't know. I think the first one makes a lot of sense. And it's kind of how I always interpreted a little bit of the cemetery portions of it. But, you know, because when you go, if you're going to go to Normandy, there's a, like, especially if you're going to Europe, there's a lot of sites to see as far as historic sites. And Normandy is one that you're always going to go see. You know, I always wondered, like, did they end up going to the town that he defended the bridge in? You know, I mean, that's where my head goes.
Ramel,
you know,
is also a fake place. So, you know, it goes along with the fake scenario.
Right, exactly. Town. In my world, they do. You know, in my imaginary visit here, is they would go to that town, which, you know, I think, I know a lot of veterans who during World War II had something similar, you know, to, you know, they had an experience in a town and they made it a point when they went back to Europe that they wanted to go to that town to see this bridge or this, you know, church or something that was special to them. So, I don't know. That's kind of how Chris plays out imaginary extra parts of Saving Private Ryan.
Wow. Okay. No, that's great. I didn't think about it from that perspective. You know, so, okay, that does make it somewhat plausible that they wouldn't have completely known where he's going and stuff like that. Wow. Okay, see?
Yeah.
See, you gave me an answer that I thought I wasn't going to get.
Yeah, well, I came up with something. Hopefully useful.
Chris, you're always very useful. Come on, stop downplaying your part here.
I tried.
But okay, I can sort of I can believe that scenario. Yeah, that's a possibility. Again, I like asking questions that can't be answered. So, you know, I'm
it
glad,
makes it fun.
Exactly. I'm glad that you found something that could be the answer to it. That also. But I guess part of that has to do with the fact that I'm less familiar with how these veterans necessarily would have looked at this type of situation. But since you have a little more experience with that, you might say, okay, well, you know what? You know, he could have just called ahead and gotten the information, you know, off of the fledgling internet from the 1990s to get a printout, you know, of where Miller would appear. You know, it also asks other questions that I don't know, you know, do you think he ever acknowledged, you know, to Miller's widow? You know, did he make some sort of trip to Adelaide? I think it was Adelaide. I think it was the name of the town in Pennsylvania. You know, where he grew up. You know, to go say, oh well, you know what, your husband did this for me. Did he ever get in touch with Ryben later, or Upham? You know, thank you for. It's like. Again, it's not necessary for the movie, but but when you look at it from the perspective of someone whose life was basically saved, you know, so what type of, you know, here he has this gratitude towards Miller. Again, it took him 50 years to go and say something in front of the grave. But, you know, still, you know, does he have gratitude to, I mean, we know that he was trying to remember the names of you know, Wade and Caparzo for that very reason, to remember, okay, these are two guys that died for me. Obviously, that number, you know, more than doubled, if not tripled, later on. Actually, more than tripled. But who knows? You know,
I like to think that of that time period, I would like to think that he did go to Miller's widow's house. That was a very, very big sign of respect to do that. It still is in the military world, but especially in the 1940s, that was a huge thing to do. And as painful as that was, I can almost see that as part of the grieving process through this whole thing, maybe for both of them. So, again, if there was ever that second Saving Private Ryan Part 2, you know, that we saw some of these other things we're talking about, I feel you would see that, yeah, he would have gone to visit his widow. And I almost view this event, being in that cemetery, as something that would be the catalyst for maybe him not talking to the survivors of this, but then now being reengaged and wanting to reach out and find them.
Right.
That's just kind of how I played out, you know. But, you know, on the same token, so this battle occurred on one day, this final battle, and the, you know, I had a B-17 pilot who, they bombed Berlin, and they had a really bad time over Germany. I mean, the airplane got shot full of holes, and they were able to nurse at home, but it was a really bad mission. And to that, on that date, every year, the pilot and co-pilot would call one another all the way up until they passed here, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago. And so that date never faded from their memory, and they would literally call each other on the phone and at least talk on that date. That must have made some imprint on them, you know, if it's an anniversary they celebrate every year.
Well, again, it makes sense. It's their renewed life, you know.
Yeah.
That type of thing. And again, it's something that they can only acknowledge one within the other, you know, one with the other. It's not as if their families or even future families had any connection to that besides the fact that, okay, I was reborn on that day.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so.
And the families, one of the things I hope, this will sound probably kind of cheesy, so bear with me. But in our museum, we have a Navy fighter. It's an F4U Corsair. And ours was involved at VF-32, in Korea, which was the squadron that Jesse Brown flew in, which was our country's first African-American naval aviator. And he was shot down. His wingman, Tom Hudner, went down to try to save him, crashed land behind enemy lines to try to save him. He couldn't get him out of the airplane, but he was with him, when he passed. Due to hypothermia or internal injuries. But long story short, the Hudner family and the Brown family are actually still friends to this day because of their ancestors, you know, one of which, you know, they never met, you know, but the families, the veterans are all gone from this event. But because they did tell the stories, there's these guys are best friends, and they're the grandson and son of the guys that were actually involved in the Korean incident.
Wow.
And I always thought that was interesting that how many years later you have, you know, the Hunter Brown family and they're best buddies. I don't know, to me, that was always pretty special. And now you're seeing this at these reunions for these World War II units where the veterans are mainly gone. We're very lucky to have, you know, one or two or five, you know, left in an entire reunion. However, these families have been getting together for decades, and now there are some units that the veterans are completely gone, but they're still having the reunions because it's the families that are getting together, and it's a way of keeping those memories going. So, war is always awful, but sometimes there's at least a few good things that we glean from it, and these friendships are examples of that.
Exactly, which, again, is the basis of Band of Brothers. There's no question about that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's the ultimate lesson of the book, the miniseries, and the stories afterwards. You know, that war brought these guys together in ways that they never would have expected. And look at it, these... You know, unfortunately, everyone from EZ, as far as I understand, everyone has already passed. But we're talking about a period of let's say 70 years, you know, where these guys still had this strong connection to one another, you know, to the bond that they had, you know, during, you know, 2 or 3 years, you know, during fighting during World War II. So it's amazing.
Yeah. I always tell people, imagine doing something so important in your life at an age like you just got out of high school, that 70 years later, you know, that's how you want history to remember you. And you still have friends that are your friends because you guys were there at the same time. And that's what it means. You know, that's what that relationship is like for veterans. And it's, you know, it's bonded by fire, I guess. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Very special.
Yeah, it really is. And so at this point, you know, she just looks at him that he's crazy, that he's asking, tell me I'm a good man. And, you know, takes her 10 seconds to respond. I don't know how he should take that, but whatever. You know, yeah, that if you say to your significant other, you know, I love you, and it takes them 10 seconds to respond after them looking at you, you might wonder why they're being preoccupied.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, maybe that's the way these type of relationships were, for the men of the greater generation. You never know. It could be this is based on accurate things that that Spielberg or Rodat looked into. And she also had to she looks up while she's pausing, she looks over at John Miller, John Miller's grave, which also makes you wonder. why are you asking because of Miller? I mean, I could go down some very, very strange rabbit holes of what might be going through her mind when she's trying to figure out his connection to Miller here, but we're not going to go there. Stay far away from that.
Yeah. And I do wonder, it's funny you mention this, because Steven Spielberg, of course, grew up with having a World War II veteran father. Correct. And I wonder, his father was a B-25 guy, and I always wondered, did he glean these parts of the movie from that, from his dad, or those experiences, or his dad's buddies? I just always wondered if that was an influence, because he nailed it. I mean, I think he really nailed the greater generation in later life, and I just feel that. I think it had to have been because he had somewhat of a front row seat to it. But
my understanding is that he did. And again, anyone who's seen The Fablemans knows that he's always been fascinated by World War II war scenarios, and also the whole hit or miss relationship he had with his parents. It's a known fact that this movie was made in order to honor both his father and, men of his father's generation at the same time. I'm not surprised from that perspective. So I think that he did use that, for these type of scenes. My guess and my assumption.
Well, I agree. I mean, like I said, I didn't know that until just now, as far as you saying that, he had done that. But I knew his dad was a B-25 guy, and he really nailed it. And I think her looking at the stone is kind of like, okay, what does this all have to do with this stone, and what, where is this all coming from? Like, I can actually hear my wife saying that. where is this?
Yeah, why are you asking me this now?
You're right, exactly. Exactly.
We've been together for X number of years, and now you're asking me this?
Yeah.
And, I mean, the rest of the minute is completely silent of dialogue. But it's still very emotional. The John Williams' music in this movie is just amazing, and it's not in most of the movie. There are rare scenes where they have his theme music playing in the background, but here it's one of them, and it's just great. Where it adds to all the emotion of these scenes. She then massages his face a little bit and then walks away, which again, she doesn't even say to him, "Who's John Miller? What's going on?" Which, on the one hand, you could question that why would a spouse not ask this type of question? But I think she knows him well enough to know that now is not the time to ask this question. He's emotional right now. Let's wait. I can wait until we get back to the hotel or whatever it is, and then say to you, explain that to me again. What was that? Who's that?
Yeah, it's exactly it. That's when they have their talk at dinner.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And then she walks back to the rest of the family. And as she's walking back, she turns around and looks at him, but doesn't say anything. And then there's a great, great camera shot here, because the camera then pulls back and we see, him standing there upright, with a stiff back, as everyone is just, everyone in the back is just sort of doing their own things. But the wife is still looking at him, and one of the granddaughters is still staring at him. And then, you know, he maneuvers himself into a position where he's standing completely straight, and then he salutes the gravestone. And it's very interesting. I mean, we do have a, you know, 3 or 4 second salute that they give us here. And, you know, the shot is from in front of him. So we see him saluting, and then it changes for the last second. You know, we see it from behind him. You know, we see the gravestone, but we don't see what's written on it or anything like that. But we see him saluting it. You know, the camera is just a great camera movement here to show this whole thing. So,
and I love this whole scene, and I love that it captures something we've experienced, you know, out on the tour with our bomber. Was these are the, you know, we don't know the relationship between Ryan and his wife, you know, when that happened, or if they knew each other before he went to war or anything like that. But we know that, of course, that the kids didn't. And this is the first time that they're getting to see their GI grandpa, their airborne grandpa, you know, standing at attention, saluting a fallen comrade. For them, they probably have never seen this. You know, they've never seen him salute someone or something like that. You know, we don't know the story about when he got out or anything like that. So we don't know if she had seen that. Maybe he stayed in through Korea and they knew each other. We don't know. But for the kids, certainly, they are seeing Grandpa in a different light, which I always really enjoyed. And we would do this with the airplane, and you know, they've got to, you know, say, wow, my grandfather did something so huge before I ever knew him, and I've only ever known him as my grandfather, you know, who gives me Werther's Originals on the porch or whatever, you know. So I just love this scene for so many different reasons, but that's one.
Okay, makes sense.
And the salute, I've seen it happen. I've seen them. I've been to cemeteries with guys who had lost somebody there, and they've done it. You know, they have stood at attention and snapped a salute. And I always think of that scene because this is the first time I'd ever seen it done, and you know, to a gravestone. But I have seen it since, and it hits you. I can't pretend it doesn't.
Understandably. And you know, they give us a little shot right at the end where we get to see the vast number of graves that are there. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow, but it's just, you know, it's like a little teaser for tomorrow with that type of thing. And that's how this minute ends. So did you have anything else you wanted to add about this minute, Chris?
No, this minute is it's just perfect. I mean, it is a perfect tribute to, you know, we're talking about World War II, but this could easily be any war with any veteran going to visit a fallen comrade. I'm sorry that I don't have much to add to it. It is just, it's just so well done. You know, like, it's like trying to improve on like the Mona Lisa or something. But as I have been and will all week, I will just encourage you, there is a museum near you. I encourage you to get involved with it, because you'll get to experience some things like this, to get to be people in the background watching this, and your life will forever be changed once you get involved in a museum. So I encourage everybody to go out and volunteer.
Okay. That is fair. That is fair. All right. So every Thursday we have a segment called Say What Thursday. It's a little game that we're going to play. And the whole idea here is that this movie is filled with tons of actors that are known at the time, or unknown at the time, but would become known. And, you know, so I thought it would be great to create a little game around that whole idea that, you know, there are many other places that we've seen these actors. So what I decided to do is the game is very simple. I will give you a movie quote, and you will have to tell me, and I will tell you what year it is, and you have to tell me who the actor is who, you know, from Saving Private Ryan, who actually says that line, and in what movie. Now, obviously, because there are so many people here, I have, you know, basically, I'm only going to give you three choices. Okay, to make it a little easier.
Okay.
So it's going to be something that's either said by Vin Diesel, Tom Hanks, or Matt Damon. Okay, those are your three your three choices. Okay, there will not be an answer that is not one of those three choices. Okay, now it doesn't mean that I'm going to use all three choices. Also, you know, for all you know, I'm going to use the same person for all five. You know, so there, you know, you don't have to say, oh, well, you know, you haven't said this person yet, so it must be them. Not necessarily.
All right. I'm probably going to do pretty rough at this.
No, I have a lot more faith in you, Chris, than you do, apparently, because I think you're going to do well. I do. But as you said, time will tell, right? All right. So we will start off with a movie from 1995. Okay, and the quote is, "We're all out of whack. We try to pitch down, but we yaw to the left. Why can't I null this out?"
Okay, so you started me off with one that I know. So that's Tom Hanks playing Jim Lovell in Apollo
13. Excellent. You see, that's the way to do it.
Awesome.
All right, the next one. See, I have to always throw in one when someone has done a Movies by Minute, just to see if they remember the quote from a movie that they discussed so in-depthly. There you go. All right, cool. The next one is from 1994. I'm not a smart man, but I know what love is.
Oh, man. Tom Hanks, and that is
Forrest Gump. All right, you see? You had so little faith in yourself.
That's awesome. I love it.
All right, the next one is a movie from 1992. Dip it, Doris. Roger Hornsby was my manager, and he called me a talking pile of pig. And that was when my parents drove all the way down from Michigan to see me play the game. And did I cry?
I love it. It's one of my favorite movies, League of Their Own, and it's Tom Hanks. Such a great movie.
Okay, next one. Remember, it could be Tom Hanks, Vin Diesel, or Matt Damon. This is a movie from 1995. If I had a dollar for every time they've killed me in this thing, I wouldn't have to work for you.
It's that's Apollo 13. That's Tom Hanks talking to Deke Slayton.
All right, and the final one from 2000. Gotta love crab. In the nick of time, too. I couldn't take much more of those coconuts. Coconut milk is a natural laxative. There's something Gilligan never told us.
I'm gonna guess on this, but I'm guessing Tom Hanks and the movie where he's on an island. He's stuck on the island.
Castaway,
I can't remember the name of that movie.
Castaway. You did so much better than you thought you would.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. I love it.
All right, Chris, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me. I've been on several of the Minute by Minute podcasts, like the Apollo 13 Minute, and I've helped out with the Die Hard Minute and MASH Minute and a few others. My everyday job, I am the museum manager at the EAA Aviation Museum out in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So I hope if you're in the area, you get to come out and pay us a visit and let me know you're coming. I'd love to come out and say hi.
Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can send me an email at movearoundminute@movearound.net. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. In my solitude,
reveries of days gone by.